Mr. Biden is in Beijing.
He's there to reassure China the U.S. is economically sound.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. Today is Wednesday, August 17th.
Coming up, can we shop our way out of the economy?
Would a more united Europe help fix the global economy?
Later, S&P can downgrade, but one city can give S&P the full boot.
All that ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Vice President Joe Biden arrived in China, and he's there for a five-day trip. Mr. Biden is hoping to reassure the Chinese government that the Obama administration has a firm grip on economic policy after S&P downgraded the U.S. credit rating. The BBC's Michael Bristow is with us now from Beijing with the latest on that story. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
What is the vice president expecting to get from his visit economically in China?
The economic crisis which has hit the world, hit America over the last few weeks is going to be a hot topic, particularly all the money, more than $1 trillion that China has loaned the United States. China wants to make sure that that investment is safe. And officials in their meetings with Joe Biden will be looking for reassurances that the United States won't be doing anything to undermine those investments.
I know the vice president is going to be meeting with his Chinese counterpart, and unlike Biden, the vice president in China is in line to just become the president of China without an election. Will we learn anything about how China's economic policies could change under new leadership?
I don't think so, because the Chinese government play their cards very close to their chest. But certainly I think it will provide an opportunity to meet Vice President Xi Jinping. He'll be able to get some kind of impression, form some impression of what kind of person he is.
How symbolic do you think is this visit to China for the vice president?
Any contact between senior leaders of the United States and China is important. After all, we're looking at two countries that are largely going to shape the way the world is in the 21st century. So they're still really trying to get to know each other and finding out, particularly from the US point of view, finding out what China really wants to do over the next few years.
The BBC's Michael Bristow in Beijing. Michael, thank you.
Thanks.
Well, the U.S. government said this morning that companies paid more for goods last month. The so-called producer price index rose 0.2%, 0.4% if you exclude food and energy prices. Richard DeKayser is an economist with the Parthenon Group. He's with us from Boston, as he is every Wednesday. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, 0.4%. So that means, I guess, my widget company is paying 4 cents more on a $10 purchase. Doesn't seem like a very big deal.
Well, it's not. The problem is we've seen it for a couple months in a row. Now, that doesn't make a trend exactly yet, but it certainly does throw a little bit of water on concerns about prices actually declining. This is very modest inflation. Unfortunately, it hasn't shown up yet at the retail level in any meaningful way. So it's catching our attention, but not ringing any alarm bells.
And when you say prices declining, you're talking about deflation. Does that mean that that concern is off the table for now?
I wouldn't say it's off the table. I'll say it's been diminished. You know, that usually a high unemployment, we've got 9+% unemployment today, is the sort of thing that ensures or runs the risk of deflation. So as long as we're running with this tremendous slack in the labor market, that risk is out there. But it's not acute at this time.
And what about stagflation, Richard, a stagnating economy and some inflation? Is that what we're experiencing?
Not yet. That's the worst of both worlds, and there is concern. Most critics of the Federal Reserve really are pushing this argument, worried that we'll have an economy that's soft, but all of this money that the Federal Reserve has been pushing into the economy is going to show up inflation. We get slow growth, high inflation. Again, the markets don't see that. If you look at indicators of inflation, they're basically telling us the next 10 years will look like the last 10 years, 2.5%, same old, same old.
Richard DeKayser, economist with the Parthenon Group, thanks as always.
My pleasure.
Well, Jeremy, Richard, four of the five biggest American tobacco companies are suing the federal government. They want the government to stop a plan to make them put graphic labels on cigarette packs starting next year. Well, the tobacco companies say those labels violate free speech by requiring them to carry a government-sponsored appeal to not use their products, which are indeed legal in this country. Attorney Bill Singer has been looking into this case. He's with us now from New York to talk about it. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
So warnings have been on cigarette packs for a long, long time here in the U.S. What's at the center of this new tobacco argument?
Their complaint is that they are being forced to advocate against smoking when they argue that it's a legal product. The contra side of that argument is that commercial speech may legally be regulated by the government. In this lawsuit, we have a fascinating watershed moment where industry is arguing that the government has reached the limits of its rightful ability to regulate speech, and the government is arguing that, no, we have every right to regulate this product that we feel causes cancer.
How much is at stake for tobacco companies in all of this, Bill?
The tobacco industry is making an argument that many other industries have historically made. Whether it's Pfizer and Merck in the drug industry or Merrill Lynch, for example, in the securities industry, they're arguing that at a point in time, it becomes too expensive for them to comply with government regulations and that the cost of complying hurts their bottom line. So there's a tremendous amount at stake for the tobacco industry because, quite frankly, these images are horrifying and they will scare people away from smoking.
Bill Singer, attorney who's been looking into this tobacco story. Bill, thank you so much.
No problem, Steve.
Well, by the way, you can follow our show on Twitter. We're at Marketplace Radio.
And Steve and I are also on Twitter ourselves. I am at Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm at Radio Chio.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
The warehouse chain BJ's Wholesale Club says same-store sales last quarter were up 8% from last year.
Retailer to thin young people Abercrombie & Fitch said today's second quarter profit was up nearly two-thirds over last year.
Marketplace senior business correspondent Bob Moon joins us now with more. Bob, an 8% climb at BJ's Wholesale. Is consumer spending looking like a bright spot?
Well, I hate to be the pessimist today, Jeremy, but take a closer look, and much of BJ's sales rise reflects the higher cost of the gasoline it sold.
Uh-huh.
Abercrombie & Fitch is out with a better picture. Its second quarter sales were up 12%. This, of course, comes on the heels of yesterday's all-important sales numbers from the country's biggest retailer. Walmart's U.S. sales were down slightly. Now, we heard from the Commerce Department earlier this week that retail sales were up, kicking off the new quarter by the most in 4 months. But, of course, that was before consumer confidence readings plunged along with the stock market.
And Bob, we always hear that consumer spending is so critical to the economy that it accounts for 70% mm-hmm. of the whole economy. So does the fact that at least some retailers are reporting strong earnings bode well for the economy as a whole?
Well, the picture's still fuzzy on that, too. On the one hand, Walmart says its shoppers are stretching their budgets, buying cheaper labels. And BJ's announcement this hour, like Walmart yesterday, stresses the importance of expense savings. Now, that can be code for cutting back on inventory, squeezing more out of the workers you have. So this might not equate to more jobs. Earlier this week, investors were pumping up shares of consumer discretionary companies, though, things like the household goods maker Procter & Gamble. So there, at least, the market has been signaling some confidence.
Marketplace senior business correspondent Bob Moon. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks.
Well, we heard about the sour earnings report from Walmart yesterday, as Bob mentioned, but Target reported better than expected numbers and an increase in sales last quarter. So why the different reports? Here's Marketplace's Eve Tro.
Walmart's always sold itself as a low-price leader, and customers bought that until the last few years. Now it's been challenged from above and below, says Bud Bugatch with investment firm Raymond James.
The dollar stores, That's who people most often compare them to.
By people, he means shoppers, the ones looking even harder than before for the very best deals. But competition's also been coming from the fancier discounter, Target. It's cut prices to lure families who fled to Walmart in the recession, and Target has tried to look more wallish, too.
Converting almost all of its stores to include supermarkets with drugstores, with discount stores.
That's Bert Flickinger at Strategic Resource Group. He says the discount retail space, where Walmart used to be top dog, is now a dog pile, with everyone from grocery stores to warehouse clubs jumping into the fray. I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace.
Well, one of the big things we consumers spend money on is healthcare. Spending on doctors, medicines, hospitals, and insurance claims a quarter of the country's gross domestic product.
As we continue our special coverage now, break down our economy one step at a time. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports on the effect the slow economic recovery is having on healthcare spending.
The phenomenal rise in healthcare spending has tapered off over the past couple years. Seems like a good thing, right? Jerry Jasinowski, who used to be president of the National Association of Manufacturers, says not necessarily.
Some companies have reduced their health costs, but that's only because they've hired less because they were uncertain about the recovery.
Uncertainty that's also forcing companies to delay reforms of health benefits, like offering workers incentives for preventive care. But as workers lose their jobs and drop out of employer-provided insurance, governments have to pick up the slack.
States face a double whammy when the economy is bad, in that more people need Medicaid and they have fewer resources to provide it.
Judy Fader is a Georgetown University healthcare professor. She says thanks to reforms, government healthcare spending has become more efficient.
Medicare is doing its job to slow cost growth, and we need to extend that kind of efficiency to the rest of the system, meaning private healthcare spending.
There's another silver lining from the focus on government austerity. Princeton health economist Uwe Reinhardt says it allows Congress to say no to powerful lobbyists like hospitals, doctors, and drug makers.
Congress now probably has a lot more spine and say, look, we'd like to help you folks, but look at this deficit. We got to think of the future and then our kids.
Reinhardt says resisting what he calls the K Street insurgents will go a long way to bring down health care's drag on the economy. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Well, from the human economy, Steve, to the pet economy. Oh. According to the largest pet insurance company in the United Kingdom, plastic surgery claims have gone up 25% over the last 3 years for pets. Now, in fairness, most of it is medical, not cosmetic, but not all. Some dogs have undergone chin lifts to curb excessive drooling.
Oh, my gosh.
And facelifts to help with eyelids that droop too much.
You know what? I'm happy.
Droopy is very happy. Let's hear that again.
You know what? I'm happy.
There you go.
That could be our mantra.
You know what?
One more time, Robbie. Play one more time.
You know what? I'm happy.
We should just play that at the beginning of every show. If Droopy is happy, Steve, I'm happy. And that is all I have to say about that.
Good, Forrest.
Now the marketplace global perspective. Over in Europe, banks and stock exchanges are unhappy with a proposed plan from French and German leaders to impose a new tax on financial transactions.
The tax is part of the latest plan to help stave off the debt crisis by moving towards closer economic integration of Europe. But as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports from London, critics say even closer ties are needed.
Germany and France are planning what they call an economic government for the 17 countries in the Eurozone. The 17 leaders would meet at least twice a year and try to coordinate their economies and public spending plans. But Steve Barrow of Standard Bank says investors are dismissing this as little more than hot air.
We've heard all this sort of thing before from Eurozone leaders about closer integration, cooperation. It's not worked in the past, and I don't think it will work now.
He says investors want the eurozone to show them the money. They want to know that richer countries like Germany will put more hard cash into the fund to bail out the likes of Spain and Italy. But that's unpopular with the German public. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Back in this country, farm equipment maker John Deere said profit was up 15% over the same quarter last year. As Marketplace's Adrian Hill reports, a bellwether like John Deere can tell us just as much about the economy as a whole.
The word bellwether comes from the practice of putting a bell on the sheep that leads the flock. The bell helps the herder know where the flock is and where it's going. Bellwether companies are like that lead sheep. David Kotok is the chief investment officer from Cumberland Advisors.
Markets look to them for guidance on how the entire industry is doing.
Earnings reports are the bells. Often buried in the numbers are tidbits of information about where things are headed. Chris Lowe is chief economist with FTN Financial in New York.
We can develop a sense of where the momentum is, and that is extraordinarily useful when trying to figure out the economy, especially when it's as rough as it is right now.
Lowe says some companies like John Deere are good indicators of specific parts of the economy. Deere sells farm equipment, so if Deere is doing well, agriculture is likely doing well. But Deere's earnings may not tell us much about other parts of the economy. Lowe's favorite broad bellwethers, UPS and FedEx.
Anytime the global shipping picks up, that's a really good indication that global economic activity is picking up.
But be careful. If you're going to watch earnings reports for clues about the economy as a whole, you've got to stay alert.
Everything changes.
Charles Trzinka teaches finance at Indiana University's Kelly School of Business.
The companies that you think are important now may not be important in the future.
Take Microsoft, Trzinka says. It would have been considered a bellwether at one time, but not anymore. The trick with using earnings reports as economic indicators is to make sure you're following the right bells from the companies and sectors that are actually doing the leading. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
Well, in that report, Adrian spoke to a professor at the Kelly Business School at Indiana University, which is an underwriter of this program.
We're going to look now at how ordinary Americans have been responding to all the mayhem in the markets when it comes to their investment portfolios and their retirement accounts. David Lazarus is the consumer columnist at the LA Times, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, David, did individual investors learn anything from the last crisis in which many of them lost a lot of money?
I'd say yeah, but the evidence is still anecdotal. There really isn't a lot of evidence that the little guy sold a lot of stocks as we had this roller coaster ride of the stock market, meaning that buy and hold, which some had been saying was completely passe, isn't so passe after all. So I think we got a real sense that the little guy learned that when the market goes completely topsy-turvy, you hit the sidelines and wait it out.
But how are you supposed to wait it out when you're sitting there, maybe you're 2 years away from retirement, and you're watching the market go down, 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 or up and down? What are you supposed to do?
Yeah, that's the real test, actually. And my advice to people is just take some Dramamine and deal with it, because you can't win that game. And we live in an age where there are supercomputers trading within milliseconds. You have to just sit back and let them do their thing when the market is having these wild gyrations. When the market is fed by emotion, pure and simple, you have to learn how to keep your emotions under control. So rather than being Captain Kirk, you want to be Mr. Spock.
Well, have people pulled away from the market in a big way? Have people decided that they're just not going to play the game at all because the only people making any money are these high-frequency traders, as you say?
I think they understand that. But at the same time, with the Fed keeping interest rates at near zero in perpetuity,
yeah,
I think a lot of people understand that if you want to make any money, they have to have some skin in the game, meaning that their 401k or their 529 education plan or something is going to be exposed to stocks in one way or another. And what that means for the little guy is you've got to know your risk tolerance and you've got to have a portfolio that can withstand anything the market is going to throw at you.
David, have you been keeping calm through all of this with your own retirement fund, or have you been taking Dramamine and getting out of the room?
Dramamine, yes, and I also haven't been looking. I find I sleep better at night when I don't go online and don't look at what my funds are doing on any given day.
Probably the best advice we've heard all day. LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And finally, Jeremy, David, we're just a couple of weeks after Standard & Poor's lowered the U.S. credit rating. Do you remember that story,
by
the
way? What was that about?
There was something about the lowering
about
of the – yeah, the downgrading of the of the economy, really, because shortly after that, S&P docked the ratings of cities and local governments as well, saying their investments rely heavily on U.S. securities. Well, the city of Los Angeles' $7 billion of investments were downgraded as well. One of, I think, 73 municipal investment pools that were downgraded. So L.A. fired back, announcing that it's not going to be paying S&P to rate its investment fund anymore. And this is what they said. They said they don't want to be associated with S&P anymore because of their overreaching, and they said because of their irresponsible act of downgrading the U.S. economy.
Wow. And let's just remember that a week ago or so, we talked about that broker from St. Louis that flew a plane over S&P's headquarters on Wall Street saying you should all be fired.
Right,
so
right.
People are not happy.
What did she say? What did she say?
You know what? I'm happy.
We'll leave it there, Steve. To check out our special coverage called The Breakdown, Our Economy One Step at a Time, go to marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great Wednesday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.